Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm your host, John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, June 2nd, 2015. President Kiir meets face-to-face with some ruling party officials whom he had accused of attempting to overthrow him in 2013.
We discussed the status of the implementation of Arusha Agreement, and we've agreed to move forward, recommitted ourselves for the implementation of Arusha Agreement, and recommitted ourselves collectively for peaceful resolution of the conflict in South Sudan.
And a former UN diplomat says Toby Lancer was the best humanitarian coordinator for South Sudan.
If you're doing your job properly as a humanitarian coordinator, you come up against interests which mean that when you are outspoken, you're bound to offend somebody or the other, and that goes with the job. Overall, I think he must rank as one of the best coordinators the UN has ever had in recent years.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. President Salva Kiir met today with five former political detainees who are in Juba to try to relaunch South Sudan's stalled peace process. The former detainees arrived yesterday to promote a new initiative proposed by Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta to reunify SPLM and hammer out a lasting peace deal for South Sudan. Philip Thorn Aleu has this report from Juba.
The meeting between the former detainees and President Salva Kiir comes more than 4 months after three factions of the SPLM signed an agreement in Arusha, Tanzania, to reunify the party. Akol Paul Kurdit is the spokesman for the ruling SPLM delegation that signed that agreement in January.
We discussed the status of the implementation of Arusha Agreement, and we've agreed to move forward, recommitted ourselves for the implementation of Arusha Agreement, and recommitted ourselves collectively for peaceful resolution of the conflict in South Sudan. We'd also then want to take this opportunity to appeal to the SPLM in opposition to join this process to bring this conflict to an end.
None of the former detainees spoke to the media after the meeting with the president. The leader of the group of former detainees, ex-South Sudanese Minister of Cabinet Affairs, Deng Alor, told reporters when the group arrived in Juba yesterday that they returned to South Sudan because they feel they have a duty to their young nation and to their fellow South Sudanese.
We have taken this conscious decision because we feel that we have a responsibility. We took the responsibility to liberate our people. I think we can also take that responsibility to rescue our people.
Alor and the poor men who are in South Sudan for talks were among more than a dozen senior members of the SPLM who were detained after violence broke out in Juba in December 2013. Accused of helping to plot a coup against President Kiir, most of the SPLM officials were released to the custody of the Kenyan authorities after several weeks, but four remained in prison for 4 months and went on trial for treason. The case against them was eventually thrown out. The rift in the SPLM grew into an armed conflict that is still raging in parts of South Sudan. The fighting swapped another faction of the main political party called the SPLM in opposition. That faction is led by former Vice President Riek Machar. Could it urge Machar to also return to the ruling SPLM and to help reunify the party?
The decisions that were made to dismiss party cadres from party leadership position as a result of internal conflict within the party have been revoked. And Riek Machar, if he comes, he will assume his position as a deputy chairman of the SPLM.
Machar and several other key party members went into hiding after violence erupted in December 2013. Machar said yesterday that the import of the former detainees to restore peace will not have an impact because their visit comes before peace has been restored. The former vice president, who was fired by President Kiir in July 2013, says his faction of the SPLM in opposition will not send a delegation to Juba to discuss party reunification. But Machar says he is still hopeful that peace will be restored in South Sudan. Mr. Kenyatta launched his initiative to revive South Sudan's peace process and end more than 17 months of fighting in South Sudan at the end of last week. The Kenyan president noted that neither 16 months of peace talks led by regional bloc IGAD nor the airport in Arusha to unify the SPLM has yielded substantial results. For VOA News, I am Philip Tonaleu in Juba.
Some analysts with South Sudanese civil society groups are praising the return of the former detainees, describing it as a new dawn in the progress towards stabilizing the country. But one analyst with South Institute warns that a wide gap still exists between the warring parties and it won't likely be diminished by the return of the former detainees. Philip Thonaleu has another story for us in Juba.
Lona James, the executive director of the Voice for Change civil society group, says the conflict that has killed thousands and forced millions of others from their homes could end if each of the factions of the ruling SPLM party come together at events like the one in Juba. Jimmy says the former detainees must agree to work with President Salva Kiir and extend the same spirit of cooperation to the SPLM in opposition negotiators, Riek Machar.
And if this trip is indeed a gesture for peace, then I expect that they are supposed to be open and they are supposed to put their interests aside and they are supposed to begin to look at the concerns.
Jimmy says the conflict is rooted in the SPLM and so the party has the power to end the war. The former detainees are expected to meet with President Kiir and members of the ruling SPLM party, then return to Kenya within 3 days, living in exile.
I just want them to come and stay. I mean, they must come back.
Jimmy says concern for the former detainees' safety prompts many South Sudanese to wonder if the warring parties are serious about compromise and whether the detainees can make much of a difference.
But one thing that I would like to point out is that their role as mediators may be challenging because these people were part of the problem. They are a party to the current conflict. So this is where it is troubling because yesterday they had their own grievances and they were part of the peace process until, you know, they became, you know, who they are now, the mediators. They are calling themselves the mediators now.
Tin Mohamed says questions remain about whether the government and the opposition led by Machar will trust the former detainees. He says this new initiative aimed at ending the conflict could be the beginning of another long process like the IGAD-mediated peace talks, which collapsed in March.
We were not expecting the guns to be silent anytime soon. You know, it's a process, of course. It's a good step. But it's not going to all of a sudden stop the war. But I think it's good because if they are doing it with all sincerity and good faith, maybe it may work out.
Ijo Elias, Executive Director of South Sudanese Network for Democracy and Elections, says both sides must put national interests above their own during this meeting in Juba.
It's symbolic in the sense that these people were seen as part of the problem. So that's how it is symbolic. It symbolizes the fact that they, on their side, they have given up on the grievances they had. And in that sense, it is symbolic because they are moving towards peace themselves because they have made themselves as mediators.
Elias says if the SPLM party takes responsibility for ending the war, the suffering that South Sudanese have endured for nearly 18 months could finally end soon. For VOA News, I am Philip Thonaleu in Juba.
You are still listening to South Sudan in Focus. It's time for our Tuesday health segment. Today we are talking about AIDS. The executive director of UNAIDS, Michelle Sidibe, says nearly 95% of African children living with HIV/AIDS do not have access to treatment. Muki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaounde.
UNAIDS Executive Director Michelle Sidibe, who is visiting Cameroon, says there has been nearly a 60% decline in the number of HIV infections among children under 15 years of age. but more than 90% of the more than 3 million children living with the disease are in sub-Saharan Africa, where access to treatment has been a major obstacle to stopping its spread.
We need to think about treatment for children. This is really a major challenge for me because it is a forgotten face. We have only 6% of the children having access to treatment, and it is a problem in the continent, and we need to have a new approach which can help us to reach those children where they are.
UNAIDS reports that only 24% of children needing antiretroviral treatment in the world received it by 2013, while 190,000 children died that same year. Sidibe says many others die in silence in areas where talking about AIDS remains a taboo.
We are making a reach out to really make sure that other countries are joining us to transform the conspiracy of silence, to demonstrate before many others that stopping the transmission from mother to child is a win-win. Having a generation free is certainly one of the best legacy for any one of us.
The UNAIDS executive director visited Cameroon as people living with AIDS complained of shortages in antiretroviral treatment. Minyim Zhang, who has been living with AIDS for 15 years, says some medical staff have been changing treatment protocols.
Nous avons des difficultés parce que pour avoir l'accès au traitement, c'est très difficile parce que.
He says having access to complete treatment is very difficult as some of the molecules needed for their treatment are not always available. He says some doctors even change treatment for some patients when they run short of supplies. According to UNAIDS, sub-Saharan Africa has the most serious HIV and AIDS epidemic in the world, with about 25 million people living with the disease, accounting for 70% of the global total. The epidemic has had widespread social and economic consequences. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, UN Secretary General condemns South Sudan's decision to expel the head of humanitarian from South Sudan. That story is coming in shortly.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how hard or easy is it for you to start a business in your country? Explain.
It is very easy to start a business in my country, Kenya. Reason is because Kenya is a country that practices agriculture and industrialization. So the market is ready and capital is readily available.
It's hard because of competition and capital. To have to raise a lot of capital, you know, to start up a business. Yeah, if start small, within a few months, it's gone. It does not celebrate the birthday. That initial capital is always a challenge. You cannot raise that much money to start up a business.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. The United Nations Humanitarian Coordinator for South Sudan, Toby Lancer, has been expelled from the country where he served for nearly 3 years. Farhan Haq, the deputy spokesman for UN Secretary General, tells South Sudan in Focus web editor Karen Zaivogo that the UN was notified last week of South Sudan's government decision to expel Lancer. Haq says the UN condemns the expulsion order and is a little confused about it.
We at the UN were informed by the Sudanese authorities some days back, actually, about their intention to expel Mr. Lancer. Mr. Lancer was already going to be set to leave South Sudan this coming month, the month of June. Just later in June, he is to take up his position as a regional humanitarian coordinator in the Sahel region of West Africa. And in fact, just last week, we, that is to say the Secretary General, Ban Ki-moon, announced the appointment of Eugene Owusu of Ghana as Mr. Lanza's replacement in South Sudan. So it's confusing why at this stage South Sudan would take this decision to expel him. And we have condemned it, and we've called on the government of South Sudan to reverse its decision.
So they didn't give any reasons for expelling him?
I don't speak for the government of South Sudan, so it would be up to them to clarify what their reasoning is. For us, in any case, as with all of the international civil servants who work for the United Nations, Mr. Lanza is supposed to be able to go about his work without hindrance from any government.
And how did you get the word that they were going to expel him? Was it in a diplomatic note or?
There have been communications between the government of South Sudan and the UN mission in South Sudan, or UNMISS.
And when is Mr. Lanza supposed to leave South Sudan?
The expectation is that towards the late part of June, towards the end of June, he would take up his position in the Sahel, and Mr. Owusu would come to replace him here in South Sudan.
But under the expulsion order, what time frame did they give him to get out of the country?
I believe that they're not allowing him in. He was, in fact, outside right now. I believe the idea is that they're not allowing him back into the country at this stage, which is unacceptable to us.
That was Farhan Haq, Deputy Spokesman for UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon. He spoke yesterday with Karen Zaivogo about South Sudan's decision to expel UN Humanitarian Coordinator Toby Lanza. A spokesman for South Sudan's president says Lanza is being expelled because of a statement he made about the country's economy. For VOA News, Waki Simon Wudu reports from Juba.
President Kiir's spokesman, Atteni Wek Atteni, says the decision to expel Lanza was passed by the Council of Ministers at a meeting chaired by President Kiir. He says the government decided to expel Lanza is because
the mandate of United Nations in South Sudan is to supplement the government of Republic of South, to support the government of South Sudan, is not to cause havoc. And Toby Lanza's statement was not giving hope to people of South Sudan, given that he was predicting the collapse, the total collapse. And we have not seen any collapse in country, you know, helpful.
Atteni says Lanza made his comments about South Sudan's collapsing economy in Geneva last month. At the time, fighting was escalating in Unity and Upper Nile states, where all of South Sudan's oil is produced. Oil is the backbone of the economy, bringing in nearly all of the government's revenues. International sources say oil production has been disrupted and oil workers have been pulled out of South Sudan, but the government has insisted that it is still in control of the fields in Upper Nile and oil is still being exported. Atteni says whether or not the government will consider the UN Secretary General's call for the expulsion order to be revoked.
That's now the matter for the president. It is a prerogative of the president. A president can overturn. It's not impossible for the president to overturn a decision. So this was a Council of Ministers decision, and the president has a prerogative to overturn it. He has not yet overturned it, but it's not impossible.
Lanza is not the first to warn that South Sudan's economy is teetering on the edge of collapse. Last month, opposition leader Lam Akol warned that runaway inflation was pushing the country's economy to the brink of disaster. And just yesterday, Deng Alor, the leader of a group of former political detainees who have returned to South Sudan to try to relaunch the peace process, said the same. Since the conflict broke out in December 2013, Lanza has been an outspoken advocate for peace and has traveled throughout South Sudan to see firsthand the impact of the conflict on the people's lives. Bong Kubong has been sheltering in a UN camp for internally displaced persons, or IDPs. He says Lanza understood the needs of IDPs.
We consider him as somebody being friend with the government, who actually support all time a positive activities of the government without seeing the problem that the government is creating. And again, his expulsion is also a bit understandable.
A British national, Lanza was appointed by UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon as the UN Humanitarian Coordinator to South Sudan in July 2012. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wodo in Juba.
The European Commissioner for Humanitarian Aid and Crisis Management, Christos Stylianides, is strongly condemning South Sudan's decision to expel Lansa, saying in a statement that the South Sudan government's choice to expel Lansa at a time when the crisis in the country is deepening is not acceptable. Stylianides also praised what he called Lansa's tireless effort to address the needs of South Sudanese civilians affected by the crisis. A former UN diplomat says the expulsion of Toby Lansa from South Sudan will frighten aid workers from speaking about the deteriorating humanitarian conditions in South Sudan. Mukesh Kapila, the former UN humanitarian coordinator in Sudan, says Juba's action is aimed at silencing aid workers from telling the world about the dire humanitarian conditions in the country.
It is the responsibility of the United Nations humanitarian coordinator, of which I was one in the United Sudan, to stand up for humanitarian needs and the most vulnerable people in the country, to advocate for bringing them protection and assistance, to coordinate with all stakeholders, including with the government and international and local agencies, and in generally to help improve the lot of the most vulnerable people on the ground.
In the case of Mr. Toby Lansa, he's been there when the country gained independence. How would you rate his performance in that country?
He's one of the new generation of humanitarian coordinators who has learned the lessons of past cowardice and chose to lead from the front. He has been courageous in drawing world attention to the greatest needs in the country and to orchestrate the maximum possible assistance to go for the poorest and most vulnerable in the country. So his performance is outstanding. Inevitably, along the way, if you're doing your job properly as a humanitarian coordinator, you come up against interests which mean that when you're outspoken, you're bound to offend somebody or the other, and that goes with the job. Overall, I think he must rank as one of the best coordinators the UN has ever had in recent years.
When a humanitarian coordinator is expelled from a country, let's say the case of Toby Lansa, how does that impact on the work of humanitarian aid agencies in that country?
Well, inevitably, when the humanitarian coordinator, who is the leader, in-country leader of the international humanitarian system, leaves under these circumstances, it demoralizes the rest of the humanitarian community. Clearly, their ability to speak up, to be able to draw attention to problems, and to honestly do their job in the best interests of the most vulnerable, clearly that is affected. But I think in the case of South Sudan, it's very, very important that the many agencies that are there, they kind of commemorate, celebrate the work that has been done by Toby and with Toby in past years, and resolve to carry on under the new coordinator in an even stronger way. I think the big difference now is that in the past, especially, for example, when I was the UN humanitarian coordinator in Sudan, when you were removed by pressure from the government, the UN system sort of turned its back on you, as it did on me. In today's case, I think under this Secretary General, Ban Ki-moon, we have got a different policy. And I think we are seeing more and more UN coordinators doing their job by speaking up. And I think this is a trend that is to be encouraged and welcomed, even though from time to time it will cause the sort of discomfort and disruption that we're seeing now with Toby.
Yeah, and would you consider Toby Lansa's expulsion as some sort of a cohesive diplomacy?
Well, expelling a UN coordinator is certainly a coercive act. However, it is only coercive if the international community allows itself to be coerced. I think one should move on and not give up on points of principle, or to compromise on matters that are important in the service of the country and its people. So it is coercive, but it is not inevitable that one has to be coerced.
That's Mukesh Kapila, the former UN humanitarian coordinator in Sudan. Kapila was kicked out of Sudan in 2004 after he spoke about the poor humanitarian conditions in Darfur. He now teaches global health and humanitarian affairs at the University of Manchester and is also a special representative of the British anti-genocide NGO, the Aegis Trust. You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here are some of today's news headlines with South Sudan in Focus, editor Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John. Top officials from France, Iraq, and the United States say they are confident about the anti-Islamic State coalition in Iraq. But they also stress there is a need for more equipment and training to bolster the offensive. Speaking in Paris during a multilateral ministerial meeting today, U.S. Deputy Secretary of State Antony Blinken said the coalition has made real gains in Iraq, but he also acknowledged setbacks on the battlefield. Standing with Iraqi Prime Minister Haider al-Abadi with French Foreign Minister Laurent Fabius at a news conference, Blinken focused the conversation on Iraq, while also briefly mentioning the need for political stability in Syria, the second front of the anti-Islamic State campaign. Boko Haram militants have again attacked the Nigerian city of Maiduguri, which is slated to be the new base of government operations aimed at crushing the group. Reports from the city say fighters used rocket-propelled grenades in today's attack, but were unable to advance beyond the city limits. Later, a suicide bomber attacked a cattle market in Maiduguri. Initial reports said up to 20 people died in the explosion. And finally, a U.S. journalist held in Yemen has been released, but the details of his detention remain unclear as the United States vows to free more Americans in the country. He was identified as Casey Coombs and believed to be one of the last American journalists remaining in Yemen after Houthi rebels besieged the capital earlier this year. The U.S. ambassador thanked Oman for its help as Coombs arrived in Muscat. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Damme.
That's our show for this Tuesday. We now leave you with a song about HIV/AIDS by Benjamin Laxin. We have been listening to Benjamin Laxin singing about HIV/AIDS. I'm John Tanza in Washington. We are glad you could join us. Please tune in again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Nasi mutun katir mayande.